So today is Wednesday, November 9th, Tet Vav Cheshvan, and Parshat Vayera, and we are continuing in our series of Hagar. I'm really excited about really spending so much time on her and how misunderstood maybe and unknown she is in terms of all of her complexity. And we're going to for sure be continuing with her next week. So I just wanted to review how we started out the class last week, that there are three commands to love in the Torah: to love your neighbor, to love God, and the final one is Hagar Itzchem, to love the stranger, which is spelled the same way as Hagar. So there's so much to learn about this original relationship with the original stranger, Hagar, and what it means. And we just started. I put papers there for you guys. You can sit wherever you want. Thanks so much for coming.
Yeah.
Okay.
Easier for us. Yeah, less distractions.
Nice. Okay. So those are those three psukim. And then... somebody has to mute. Okay. And then the final review is just to remember where Hagar came from, that we all know that she was a daughter of Paro. She was Egyptian, but that she was the granddaughter of Nimrod. And last week we spent some time talking about Eliezer, the servant of Abraham, which the Targum also tells us was the son of Nimrod. So that's just an interesting thing. So I wanted to also review some things that I left out from last week's Parsha. So this is about last week's Parsha, but it was really imperative that we include it this week. So this is from Shmot Parshat Mishpatim, so it's not last week's Parsha, but it's where we get the command on how to treat certain people, including the stranger. So you shall not mistreat a stranger, nor shall you oppress him, for you are strangers in the land of Egypt. You shall not oppress any widow or orphan. So this actually has to do with this week's Parsha, because who's going to turn into, essentially, a widow and an orphan is Hagar and Ishmael. And the word in Kafbet, you can see I bolded it. It says if you oppress, I should have bolded it in Kaf Aleph also, lo te'anun, im ane ta'ane oto, if you do oppress him, then if he cries out to me, I will surely hear his cry. My wrath will be kindled. I will slay you with the sword, and your wives will be widows and your children orphans. So it's quite the punishment. And this verb, la'anot, is the same verb used for when God tells Abraham that his strangers are going to be strangers in a strange land, and they're going to be enslaved, and they will be tortured. Anu otam. And so we have it there that it's going to happen to us. And we have it in... it's the same verb we used last week also, right after that episode of Avram getting this prophecy, of how Sarah treated Hagar, that Anu Ota, she tortured her, the same verb. And now Hagar and Ishmael are essentially going to be turned into widow and orphan, and they're going to cry out. So that's how we're transitioning from last week into this week. And here's the pasuk from last week when the angel appeared to Hagar. So Vayomer la Malach Hashem, the angel of Hashem said to her, remember we had this repetition of the angel of Hashem saying things to Hagar several times, and the Midrash tells us it's several different angels that appeared to her. Hinach hara, behold, you'll be pregnant, v'yolat ben, and you're going to give birth to a son, v'karat shema Yishmael, and you're going to call his name Yishmael, ki shama Hashem, because Hashem heard, el onyech, your torturement. That's not a word. But your predicament of being tortured, God heard it, and that's why he's named Ishmael, because God heard it.
Ishmael translates?
Heard. God heard. Yeah, God heard. Shema. It's the same word as Shema.
Right.
I know I've mentioned this in other shiurim, but something kind of scary is that Ishmael is from Shema, and Esav is from La'asot. And what did the Jewish people say when they received the Torah, before they received the Torah? Nishma. Yes, na'aseh and nishma. We'll do and we'll hear. So each of our adversaries, main historical adversaries around the history, have encompassed one of those attributes. And Yishmael is here. And it's very interesting because the most we Jews ever have formal prayer in the course of a day, a Jewish day, is Yom Kippur, where we have five formal prayers, including the Ilah. And the Muslims pray five times a day, every day, on a normal random day. So they're really playing into this being heard in praying. So we Jews have a lot of work to do with our own prayer. Okay, so now what's really interesting is there's a debate about the 10 trials of Abraham. Everyone agrees that Abraham had 10 trials that he had to pass, but there's a debate what they are. The debate is normally seen between Rambam and Rashi. Mm-hmm. So here I found it in Rav Avadya Mibar Tanur, they're both commenting on the Mishnah that just says that there are 10 trials. It doesn't list them or tell us what they are. So the Rambam has a commentary on the Mishnah where he lists them, and Rav Avadya Mibar Tanur has a commentary where he lists them. So this is really interesting. According to the Rambam, number 8 is Harchakat Hagar, Achar Hibana Tomimana, the distancing of Hagar after he was built up from her. That's number 8. And number 9, a separate trial, is Harchakat Bano Yishmael, is the sending away of his son Yishmael. So those each were in and of themselves, according to the Rambam, their own trial, which is different than Rav Avadya Mibar Tanur, which is also attributed to how Rashi understands it. Chi'i, number 9 here, is Garesh Ha'ama Hazot Ve'etbana, together expelling the handmaid and her son. So it's an interesting thing to see them as one trial together or two separate trials, the relationship of Avram to the woman Hagar and Avram to his son Yishmael, whether that was one trial or two different trials. And here you can see the full lists that I found on some website in English.
I can see it being separate because he had the choice to keep the child.
No, that was, we'll see. We'll look at the psikim. Okay, we'll look at the psikim. Excellent.
One would think you would want to keep your child and cast out the handmaid.
Yeah, but if the child's a danger. So that's interesting. Okay, so let's look at the psikim.
I didn't
know that yet. No, we'll see. Let's look at this week's parsha. So, Batera Sarat ben Hagar Hamitzrit Asher Yaldala Avram Mitzachik. So this is right after Sarah and Avram have a weaning party for Yitzchak. We're told that comes right before it. You can see this is verse 9. So Sarah gives birth to Yitzchak. She names him. They have a weaning party for him when he's 2 years old. And Sarah saw the son of Hagar the Egyptian, who she had born to Avraham, Mitzachik. You can see the English says making merry. But Litzachek means to laugh. It's Yitzchak's name, right? It's also what both Sarah and Avraham did when they found out that they were going to have a child. They were Mitzachek. And we spoke about this, I think, last year on this parsha, maybe even, of Sarah's laughter and whether it had some cynicism in it from the beginning of this week's parsha and how she dealt with that. And so therefore, Sarah sees something in this Mitzachek of Yishmael that is not so innocent.
And drive
in. Mommy, you have to mute. Vatomer la'avram garesh ha'ama hazot ve'et bena. So she then, as a result of whatever she saw with the mitzachik, she says to Avram, drive out or expel this handmaid. So again, we discussed a lot last week whether she's a wife, whether she's a handmaid. We thought maybe she's a handmaid to Sarah while she's a wife to Avram. Mm-hmm. And Sarah is clearly calling her this handmaid and her son. Ki lo yirash ben ha'ama hazot im b'ni im Yitzchak. Because this son of the handmaid will not inherit with my son, with Yitzchak. There's a lot of commentary on why it seems to be redundant. My son, Yitzchak, isn't that obvious? Sarah feels very strongly about this. Vayera hadavar ma'od b'nei Avraham, but it's really evil. Vayera, it says it greatly displeased, but ra is bad. It was really bad in the eyes of Avraham, al odot b'no, concerning his son. What's missing here?
Which son?
No, because it's obviously about Ishmael.
Okay.
Concerning Hagar. Mm-hmm. Okay, so it's bothering him more about his son. We're going to see commentary on that. Vayomer Elokim el Avraham, God says to Avraham, Al yireh be'inecha al ha'na'ar. Don't let this be bad in your eyes with regard to the na'ar ve'al amatecha and your handmaid. God's referring to her as a handmaid. Kol asher tomar lecha Sara. Everything that Sarah says to you, shma b'kola. Listen to her voice. And this is the famous Rashi where he tells us, according to the Gemara, that Sarah was a greater prophet than Avram. Ki b'yitzchak yikare lecha zera. Because your seed is going to be called, for in Isaac will be called your seed. V'gamet ben ha'ama l'goy asimenu. Don't worry, I'm also going to place the son of the handmaid as a nation. Kizar achahu, because he's your seed. So out of you being the father, he will merit also. V'yishkem Avram b'boker. Avram wakes up early in the morning. This might sound familiar to you. Might not have realized it's in both places. So we're going to see this in the last chapter of this week's Parsha when he goes to sacrifice Yitzchak. Rabbi David Foreman, I think, refers to this whole episode as the sacrifice of Yishmael because there's a lot of parallels here. So Avram woke up early in the morning. V'yikach lechem v'chemat mayim. And he took bread and a leather pouch of water. Vayten el Hagar, sam al shichma. He gave it to Hagar and placed it on her shoulder. Vata yelid, and also the boy. It's a question whether he was also placed on her shoulder, even though he's not so young at this point. Vishalcheha, and he sent her away. So he didn't, this is interesting, the verb being used. Vayishalcheha, he sent her, which is like a shaliach, it's positive connotation even, as opposed to vayigar sheha. It doesn't say he expelled her. He sent her. Vatelech, and she went. Vateta bamidbar. So that's an interesting word. She wandered in the desert. Teta, the shorsh is ta'a, which you might know the Hebrew word ta'ut, a mistake. So she somehow became mistaken. She wandered, she got lost in the desert in Beersheba. Ve'ichlu ha'mayim min ha'chemat, and they finished the water. The water was finished. It was depleted from the pouch. V'tashlech et ha'yelet. And here, this is really interesting. Tachat achad asichim. She flung, here it says she cast the child under one of the bushes. I may have taught this, one of my first shirim about tshuva, and how God flung us. Did I teach that? I think I did. How yeah. God flung us. Yeah, it's the same word of tossing, flinging. The opposite of what Avraham did to Sarah, which is with the chet, where he sent her like a shaliach, somebody on a mission. This is Hagar just flung her son under one of the bushes when they completed the water. So just this choice of word, you're already seeing some insight into Hagar, where it's going to be complex, but you're seeing. V'telef v'teshev la mineged harchek kimetachave keshet. And then she went and she sat from afar, the distance of a bow shot. This is super interesting because Yishmael is going to grow up to be an archer. Ki amra al ereb b'mot hayeled, because she said, I can't see the death of the child. So this is really played up among all the commentaries to sort of highlight Hagar's uncaringness. And I didn't see anybody mention this, but I just feel like, to be intellectually honest, I have to mention it. Nobody mentions that maybe Yocheved did the same thing with Moshe when she put him in the little ark and she went away. So I don't know. Like, but Miriam did stay to see what would happen. But I just feel like we have to say that this attribute of Hagar in terms of being a mother and not being able to see what happens to her child. Now, on the other hand, Yocheved very carefully places in this very carefully made little ark, this little basket, and very carefully places it in a very specific place. And the verb for Hagar is hashlacha, just, you know, tossing. So that could be a difference as well. Okay, so then what happens? But Vatisa et kola, she lifts up her voice, Vatefk, and she cries. Okay? So remember what happens to the widow and the orphan who cry out to God? They're heard, right? Vishma Elokim et kol hana'ar. This is interesting. We don't know anything what the boy is doing, what he's saying, if he's praying, if he's crying. But it tells us that God heard the voice of the na'ar, the boy. Whereas before, in last week's parsha, God heard her suffering. Now God is hearing the boy. Vayikra malach Elokim el Hagar. So now another angel of God. And the verb here, this is interesting, says vayikra. He called her as opposed to saying to her, which was last week's parsha. I don't know what the significance of that is. Min hashamayim, from the heavens. Also, this is coming from the heavens. It wasn't from the heavens last time. It might be a little bit more distant than last week's. Maybe it was more intimate of saying as opposed to calling and being right there as opposed to from the heavens. Vayomer la, and he said to her, malach Hagar. What's troubling you, Hagar? As if it's not obvious. But again, last week he said, where are you coming from? And obviously he knew the answer too. So these just could be openings. Al tir'i, don't be afraid. Ki shama Elokim et kol ha-na'ar, because God heard the voice of the na'ar, the boy. So again, he's not even telling her that God heard her crying, but rather her son. Ba'asher hu sham, in the place where he is. This is, you've probably heard this several times on every Rosh Hashanah, when we read this as the Torah reading. Ba'asher hu sham, in the place where he is, the angels say, you could just let him die now, God, and then you'd spare all this trouble for the Jewish people. But God only judges people where they are, not based on future action. And that's what that means. Kumi si'i et hana'ar, get up, lift up the young boy, v'hechziki et yadech, and grasp your hand, bow upon him, ki l'goy gadol isimanu, because I'm going to make him into a big nation, which she had already been told in the previous prophecy, last week's parsha. V'yifkach Elokim et einaha, God opened her eyes, v'tera be'er mayim, and behold, she sees a well, just like last week there was a well. V'telech v'temalei et hachimat mayim, then she went and she filled up the water pouch, v'tashk et hana'ar, and then she gave it to the boy to drink. V'yi Elokim et hana'ar, God was with the lad. This is very similar language to use with Yosef when he's in Egypt. God was with him. V'yigdal, and he grew up. V'yeshev b'midbar, and he dwelled in the desert. V'yihi rov kashet, and he became an archer. Remember, she sat a bow's width away from him, and now, lo and behold, he becomes an archer. Vayeshev b'midbar Paran, and he dwelt in the wilderness of Paran. Vatikach lo imo isha, and his mother took for him a wife, Me'eretz Mitzrayim, from Egypt. Okay?
So how much time was passed here?
Unclear. He's not a young man when he goes, right? He's probably 16, because he was 13 when he was circumcised. A year later, Yitzchak was born. 2 years later was the weaning party.
Okay, because when you said before that he was put on the shoulder, probably not because he wasn't a young boy, he's 13-ish.
14-ish. He's 16-ish. He's 16-ish, at least 16.
I was thinking a two-year-old.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, what's going on?
They grew up together for 16 years in the same household.
14 years.
Ishmael,
because he was 14 when he was born. So, 14 years in the same household. And then Sarah sees this mitzachek that we don't know what it is exactly.
That makes her suspicious. We don't know what that was.
Yeah. Rashi brings a midrash that associates this word, litzachek, with idolatry, inappropriate sexual relations, and murder. There's a midrash actually that tells it's like
Ishmael was guilty of.
One midrash says that it's like a William Tell scenario, that he put an apple on top of his head and was shooting at it. So that's the murder part.
It's practicing being an archer and missed.
Exactly. Okay, so first we're going to look at the Ramban. So this is on Pasuk Tet, which is that Sarah saw the mitzachek. Okay, so he says, v'nachon be'enai. So what's correct in my eyes? This, Ramban will oftentimes present several different opinions about from different people, and then he'll say, and what's right in my eyes? You have to be really careful when you read the Ramban, because you never know which of the opinions he presents he's going to agree with, and the Ramban is usually super long, so you have to have the patience to sit and read the whole thing to know what he really thinks. Shehayaza b'yom higamel Yitzchak. So this was on the day that Yitzchak was weaned. And she saw him mocking Yitzchak, o al hamishteh hagadol, or mocking this great big feast that they were having as the weaning party, which we totally should bring back in fashion, right? Weaning party.
I don't know if I'm lasting 2 years.
V'lechach amar katuv et ben hagar hamitzrit. And that's why the pasuk refers to him as the son of Hagar the Egyptian. V'lo amar et Yishmael mitzachek. The pasuk does not say that she saw Yishmael mitzachek, whatever that word means, but rather the son of Hagar the Egyptian. V'chein amra, and therefore she said, garish et ha'ama hazot ve'et bana. Expel the handmaid and her son, ki amra ha'eved ha'mal'ig al Adonav, because she said, the servant who mocks his master, chayav hu lamot, lamavet, o lehal koto, he is liable for death or at least lashes. Ve'eni rotza raksha tegaresh oto, but I don't want you to just expel him who's mocking me'iti from me, below yirash. And that he won't inherit from your property, klal, at all, imbini, with my son, shehu ben gvira, because my son is the son of the mistress of the house. Ve'amra, shigaresh gamimo, she said, also expel his mother, ki lo yuchal hanar la'azovet imo, ve'azovet imo umet, because a young boy can't abandon his mother, and then he would surely die. So this gives him a chance at life to be abandoned with his mother. Okay, this is in then Rabbeinu Bechaya repeats the Rambam. That's why it's in smaller print. That's the repetition of the Rambam. V'hukshar hadavar be'enei Avram. This was very difficult in the eyes of Avram. Kamo she'me'id hakatuv, like the pasuk testifies. V'yira hadavar me'od be'enei Avraham. This was very bad in the eyes of Avram. V'amar al odot beno, but the pasuk tells us on his son, Gilaba Zama al Tosha Avram. It reveals the high level of Avraham in this. Shalohuk Shalo al Cheshek HaPilegesh. It wasn't difficult for him in terms of his desire for the handmaid, or the concubine. Rak al Dot Beno, only on the fact of his son. Ki ilu amra legaresh HaPilegesh Labada, because if she had, Sarah had said to expel only the concubine, it wouldn't have been difficult in his eyes. So he clearly agrees with Rashi that the sending out of Hagar was not a separate trial, but that it was because of the son. Okay, so Sforno, 16th century Italy, says, et ben Hagar hamitzrit, so the same pasuk, the son of Hagar the Egyptian, chashva shehit orver leze halag mipnei sheshamakach me'imo. So what's this? So again, pay attention to this mitzachek, which it's at its root means laughter, that all of these commentaries are interpreting as mocking laughter. They're saying that's where the mockingness comes from. And so Sarah thought that Yishmael was awakened to this mockery because he heard it from his mother. His mother was the cause of Yishmael's mitzachek, mockery. Ka'amramzal, as our rabbi said, shota dinuka b'shuka, o da'avuhe o di'me. So this is a crazy midrash. I actually told this midrash to my 9th and 10th graders, which I shouldn't have. I said, you're not mature enough for it, and indeed they weren't. So the midrash is that nobody believed that Avram and Sarah actually had a child. And they thought that they actually found this baby in the marketplace, in the shuk, and brought him home and told everybody it was theirs. So at this weaning party, it says that they didn't bring their wet nurses, and Avram said to Sarah, this is not the time for modesty, and that she took off her shirt and milk flowed like fountains, and all of these people who did, some of them really believed it and some of them didn't believe it, brought their babies to Sarah and she nursed them. And this, the Midrash continues, is the soul root of all the future converts and righteous Gentiles. That their great, 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 great grandparents nursed from Sarah Imenu. Yes. So that.
I've never heard that before, yeah. That people didn't think that they actually had the baby just because it's so, yeah, miraculous,
yeah,
in that age.
Yeah.
Yitzchak that looks like Abraham.
Yeah, that's how they made Yitzchak look like Abraham, so it would be obvious. Yeah, very good. So that's where this mockery comes from, and that's what Yishmael is repeating, and the Sforno is saying he heard it from his mother. Okay, Haktav v'Hakabbalah, 19th century Germany, friends with my favorite, the Malbim. So, Asher Yaldal Abraham Mitzachek. So that she had given birth to Abraham, Mitzachek, mocking. haya mal'ig. So again, he says it's mocking. Kema'amar leitzanei hador. Like the mockers of the generation said, and this is different, Shome Avi Melech Nitabra. If you remember that there was a famine and they went to the Plishtim, Philistines, and Avram said Sarah was a sister, and so Avimelech took her, and then the whole household was plagued. But it looked very suspicious. Look at this, right after she's closed up with Avimelech, she gets pregnant. So this was the mockery, that she was pregnant from Avimelech, not from Avraham. Mm-hmm. And they were mocking on those who said that Sarah gave birth to through Avraham, that Avraham sired this child. And it makes even more sense to say, why does the pasuk say the Egyptian maidservant that had borne to Avraham? Why does it have to say those extra words? To show that this was the basis of the mockery. Yishmael is claiming, I'm really the only one that Avraham's the true father. Your father is Avimelech. Okay? So everyone in the household saw Sarah give birth. They knew he wasn't just an orphan from the Shuk, but who is the father? She had just been closed off with Avimelech, and that's what Yishmael's mocking. And we can't blame a child. They only repeat what they hear from their parents. And that's why Sarah said, get rid of the handmaid. So Hagar was feeding this to Ishmael, and that's why they both had to go. Okay, turning now to a midrash. Vatomer la'Avraham garesh ha'ama hazot. And she said to Avraham, expel this handmaid. Zehu hanisayon hashmini. So this is where it's saying this is the eighth test. Shamra lo Sara garesha ama hazot lachar shenivna mimenu. That Sarah said to him, expel this handmaid after he had already been built up from her. Vanisayon hachi'i. And the ninth test, zeshiloach Yishmael. This was the sending off of Yishmael. Beno, his son. Ve'akashalav yoter min hakol. And this was more difficult. The sending of Yishmael was the most difficult test. Mm-hmm. Shana Amar, as it says in the pasuk, Vayera hadavar me'od bein Avram al odot beno. And this was very bad in the eyes of Avram because of his son, lo al odot imo, and not because of the mother. So that's just an expansion of what we saw before. Okay, Baal HaTurim, this is the Tur, who wrote the Arba Turim that the Shulchan Aruch is based on. Garesh, so he tells us that there are three instances of somebody expelling somebody else. So ours is Garesh Ha'ama, expel this maidservant. Then there's from Proverbs, Garesh Lots, and the full pasuk you can see underneath, banish a scorner and quarrel will depart and litigation and disgrace will cease. Kishahu Kala Garesh Garesh. And this was Hashem saying to Moshe during the Makot, the plagues of Egypt, I will bring one more plague upon Paro and upon Egypt. Afterwards, he will let you go from here. When he lets you out, he will completely drive you out of here. Okay? So the first one is expel this handmaid. The second one is banish a scorner. And the third one is Paro banishing us, the Jewish people. So what does the auditorium say? Ubishvil, Perush, the explanation is, Garesha ta'am hazot vetvana, expel this maidservant and her son, ve'az tigaresha lets, and then you will have expelled the scorner. Ubishvil shagarsha Sarah lehagar, but since Sarah expelled Hagar, mi beta, from her household, ne'ensha, she was punished. Ve'nishtabdu baneha, her children were enslaved, v'hutzrechu lehitzgaresh misham, and they needed to be expelled from there. And where is there? Egypt. And where is Hagar from? Egypt. Okay? So we're reading into this now a little bit of punishment of Sarah. We're going to see other hints of that in some other commentaries as well. Okay, Ayalat HaShachar, who I think we learned about last week. I think he's 19th century. Ahanar Bel Amatcha, on the boy and on the maidservant. Let's just remind you, this is Pasuk Yud Bet. So God saying to Avram, don't be displeased on the lad and on the maidservant. Masha makdim et ha-na'ar le'amato. Why does God mention the boy before his mother? Yeshlamar lefi sheze yoter chidush. Because this is more of the chidush, the newness. The yoter matzui shemegarshim nashim ma'asher banim. It's more common that you would expel a wife than you would expel a child. V'harambam ve'avot perek hei migim Mishnah Gimel, and he's saying, go see the Rambam who separates them, who says that these were two separate trials. Habal Turim Katav, and now he quotes the Baal Turim that we just read. Ubishvil Shagarsha Sara Lahagar Mibeta Ne'ansha V'Nishtabdu Baneha V'Vetrachol Lihitgarish Misham. That because Sarah expelled Hagar, her children would become enslaved and need to be expelled. It needs to be that even though God said to Avram to listen to his wife, how can Sarah be punished when it seems like it has God's stamp of approval on this action? In any case, if Sarah had tried to find a different course of action, and she hadn't said to send them out, God wouldn't have had to agree with her. Meaning, yes, something needed to be done, but it didn't have to be this drastic. But since Sarah suggested it, God agreed with it, and that's why she was punished. If the Ayelet HaShachar hadn't written this, none of us could have said it, but that's what it says. That Sarah was wrong in her conclusion of what needed to be done. Okay? He's a unique voice. We don't see too many people who agree with him.
It would have changed the course of history.
Well, that's the whole expression, Ma'ase avot siman labanim. The actions of the father is assigned to the sons. And there are always, you know, multiple ways of going about doing things. Okay, the malbim, that this was bad in Avram's eyes, by Yirah. Sarah hikdima shiigaresha ta'ama. Sarah said first to expel the maidservant, ki chashva she'ikar ahavat Avraham hu lepilagsho, because she thought that the principal love of Avram was to his concubine, v'imaya have gam etaben, and with the concubine he also loved the son. V'hakatuv meid, but the pasuk testifies, she'ikar mashehu ra b'inei Avraham, that the principal manner, the main thing of what was bad in the eyes of Avram, haya al odot bano, it was on sending out his son. So it's an interesting little insight that Malvin's giving us about Sarah. I'm not sure I agree with him, that she thinks Avram loves Hagar more, but really Avraham loves his son more. Okay, back to the Midrash Hagadol. Leishkim Avraham baboker. Avraham woke up early in the morning. Rabbi Yehuda Nasi Omer Hishkim Avraham baboker v'katav get gerushin. So he woke up early in the morning and he wrote out this decree of divorce. V'natan lehagar v'shalcha. And he gave it to Hagar and she sent her away. Shenamar v'shalcha. Because it says, and he sent her, Ulahalan Huamar Vishacha mi beito. And when it's talking about divorce, it uses the same verb of lishloch, to send, and he sent her from his house.
And she was a wife in
her. Yeah, so according, but that's what we discussed last week, that maybe with regard to how Sarah gave her to him, she was his wife. The Natan la lechem umayim mazon la ulabana, and he gave bread and water and food to her and her son. Batela fatita. They went and she wandered. Kevan sheigia lapetach hamidbar, when she reached the opening of the wilderness, hitchila to'a achar avodah zara. So we mentioned this strange word of atita, which comes from the word ta'ut, to make a mistake. So in wander, so she began to wander after idolatry shelebet aviha, from her father's house. So it wasn't just that she got physically lost in the desert, she got spiritually lost in the desert as well. Dichtiv hacha, as it's written here, Vatita Vakativ Lahalan, and it's written there in Yirmiyahu, Hevel Hema Maase Tatuim. So they are vanity, a work of delusion. So this work of delusion is referring to idolatry. Okay. And Keter Yonatan, again, this is a Hebrew translation of the Aramaic translation of Aramaic of Yonatan ben Uziel of the Torah. So he's repeating what we just saw in this midrash. When she got to the opening of the wilderness, she went and she wandered after idolatry. And then Yishmael got this horrible fever, and he drank all the water until it was complete, it was finished, out of this pouch. v'nechrach v'nichlash b'saro, and he became very weak, v'tis ehu v'nitziaga, and she then became totally worn out, v'tikra liyurato, and she called out to her, to yurato she'aviha, to the god of her father, that's a lowercase god, v'lo ana ota, and he didn't answer. And just this word, ana, answer, also is the same word for torture. I'm not sure how they're related. Umiyad, and therefore, he shlicha teyal tachat echad min ha'itzim. That's when she tossed the boy under one of the trees. So this targum is making it much more nefarious than what we'd seen before, that she completely gave up on her son because she wasn't answered from the idolatrous gods of her father. So that's how low she stooped in the desert. Okay, so now moving on to this tossing, v'tashlech, mi'inyan aziva v'ye'ush. Malvin says this is abandoning and completely losing any hope, despairing. Kamo ki nasatani v'tashlecheni. So he's quoting, I forgot to look up where that was from. U'mefaresh ha'shlecha v'teylech v'teyshev la mineged. And she's explaining, he's explaining that this tossing is she went and she sat afar. V'achar shegam sham sham akol hayalad so'ek. And even there, when she tossed him, she could still hear him crying. Vateshev mineged od rachok yoter. So then she distanced herself even more from her son. So he's seeing this as a process of how she's despairing and not caring and distancing herself. Okay, in contrast to that, we have Ha'emek Davar, the Netziv, Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin, who says something nice. Vateshlech et hayalad, she tossed her son. Le'el kra oto hanar. Above, he's called a na'ar. So what's the difference between a yelid, a boy, and a na'ar, a young man? Haynu b'sha shaya bari nikra na'ar. When he was healthy, he's called a na'ar, a young man. Ve'ata asher chala nikra yelid. But when he gets sick, he's a boy. And for those of us who have older children, we know that when they get sick, they become like our baby again. But tachat echad asichim, under one of the bushes, lehagin min hashemesh habo'er mosif sama. Why did she toss him under one of the bushes? To protect him from the sun that was burning and would increase the thirst, because they had no water. So the Netziv is giving us a positive thing, that he's referred to as a boy, which shows how she's more concerned about him, and she puts him purposely under a bush.
Except for the word cast.
Yeah, except for the word cast. But she puts him purposely under the bush to protect him from the sun in the shade. Okay, so now this midrash is really interesting. Harchek kemetachave kashet, a distance of a bow's width. Amar Rabbi Birchia shehiticha devarim kashim klapei mala. So what does this mean, a bow's width? It means that she shot arrows, basically, to God. She's taking it out on God. And that's why we have this kind of weapon imagery here, that she threw out words, difficult words, towards God. Amra ribon ha'olamim, she said, Master of the world, lo amarta li harbe aber zaracha, didn't you say to me, I'm going to increase your seed? Hare Avraham nita ter besara ve'amra lo garesha am hazot. Avraham is crowned with Sarah, and she said, expel this handmaid, ve'afata hiskamta al yada, and you agreed with her. Ve'amarta kol asher tomar alecha ser shma v'kola, you said everything that Sarah says to you, listen to her voice. Elech ve'anichenu b'midbar, so I'm going to go and I'm just going to leave him in the wilderness, tachat ha'ilan, under the tree, ve'arehu mate, and he's going to die. Miad ramaz ha'kadosh baruch hu l'malach, immediately God hinted to an angel, ve'amar lo, and he said to him, lech ve'hale lo et ha'be'er, go and bring this well out for her. Hadahi vayifkach Elokim ateneha, and that's why it says God opened her eyes. Amar hamalach, the malach said, Ribon shalolam, Master of the universe, Adam shekatuv bo vehu yeh pera adam, a man for whom it's written that he's going to be a wild donkey. Ata ma'alelo et haber, you're going to lift up the well for him. Amar lo hakadosh baruch hu, akshav mahu, God said to the angel, what is he now? Amar lo tzadik. The angel said he's a tzadik. This is the famous midrash I referenced before. Amar lo eni dan et adam, ela b'sha'a shehu medbo. I only judge a man at his time and where he is now. Amar Rabbi Simon ki shama Elokim et kol hana'ar. Rabbi Simon said, when God heard the voice of the young man, Lo shehu tzaddik, ela ba'asher hu sham. Not that he was a tzaddik, but where he was then. Mikan amru, from here we say, En HaKadosh Baruch Hu dan et adam, ela lafi sha'ato. This is where we get the saying that God only judges people where they are at the time. Okay, so this gives us, from the story that we know about judging where somebody is at, we see a little insight into Hagar, and rather, as the previous source depicted her as praying to her gods, lowercase g, here she's depicted as being angry and calling out to God, which is really fascinating how she talks to him. Okay, Hadar is kenim. Al era b'mot hayalad, I can't see my son die. Ve'im tomar hechi svura sheyamot. Why does she think he's going to die? Ve'halo amar lo hamalach al p'nei kol echav yishkan. The angel told her he's going to dwell with all his brethren. She knows from the prophecy before that this he's not going to die and he's going to have children. Yeshlamar shema miktane amuna haita. So therefore, the Hadar Zkenim is saying maybe she had little faith. Sharei nami chazra el gilulei aveha. She also returns to the idolatry of her father. Kedikti vatelach vetita. As it says, she went and she started practicing idolatry. So that's a different way of looking at it. You can see how the commentators all kind of go back and forth with being sympathetic to Hagar and with being completely opposed to her and everything she does. Okay, so this is Haradal, who I gave you. We've never seen him before. Rabbi Yehuda Luria, 19th century from Lithuania. And this small stuff was interesting, but it wasn't relevant to what we were saying, so I left it in. From his birth, the angel said that he would be familiar with a bow, like a bow and arrow. Maybe that's why Hagar chose that distance to sit away from him. And he also gave this as an inheritance to his children after the bow. Mispar Keshet Giborei B'nei Kedar. So this is from Isaiah. And the rest of the number, the bows of the heroes of the children of Kedar shall decrease. So this is somebody named Kedar, who is being associated with bow and arrow. Kedar is one of, I think, Yishmael's descendants. I should have included the pasuk for that. And then, okay. So now, Chashuke Chamed.
So is he saying here that the descendants of Ishmael will be decreasing?
No, just that they'll be increasing.
That's certainly not the case today.
Right, and that they'll have bows and arrows. Just about the bows and arrows.
The bows and arrows. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So Chashuke Chamed is one of my favorite. We have not seen him yet in our Parsha Shirim, but we did see him a lot when we learned Sefer Shmuel. It is Rav Zilberstein, who you may have heard of, Revna. It's a book, it's translated into English also, where he takes questions, halachic questions he's received and organizes it according to the Parsha. So here he takes halachic questions he receives and organizes it according to pages of Gemara. So this is from Ketuvot. And the question, you can see the title of the question, to nurse a baby who's only meant to live for a very short while. Is it better for the mother to bond with the baby or maybe not? She'ela, so here's a question. Ma'aseh she'nolad yalad imum kasha b'leiv. A boy, lo aleinu, which didn't happen to any of us, is born with a defect, a very difficult defect in his heart. U'ledat harofim yamav sforim. And according to the doctors, his days are numbered, very limited. Hayu mumchim she'ta'anu she'ulai adif she'aim lo tinik tanika t'yalad. There were experts who claimed that maybe it's better if the mother doesn't nurse the baby. Ele yaznuhu bechalev malachati. Rather, he should get formula. Ki yesh chashash shema ha'im titzkasheleyal, because there's a fear that maybe the mother will bond with the boy. V'yigramla mashber nafshi, and she'll have a spiritual crisis b'sha'at p'tirato, at the time that he dies. Ha'im ba lishol, the mother comes to ask, ha'im ta'adif et tovat hayalid? Al tovata ha'ishit, what should be preferable? The good of the child or the good of the mother? Tshuva, here's the answer. B'Torah ne'amar, v'yachlu ha'mayim min hachemat. This is our passage. The water was finished from the pouch. Vateshlech etayal tachat echad esichim. And she tossed the boy under one of the bushes. Vatelech vatishav la mineged harchek kemetachave kashet. And she went and she sat far away, the length of a bow's width. Ki amra al ereh b'motayal, because she said, I'm not going to see the death of the boy. V'katav, and Harav Shimshon Raphael Hirsch. So this is a very famous from Rav Hirsch. I decided to include it here in this context instead of quoting from Rav Hirsch directly. 19th century German. Shaita kan hitnahagut shel ima nochriya. Rav Hirsch says that this description of Hagar tossing her son aside so she doesn't see him suffering is the behavior of a non-Jewish mother. She'edifa et tovat atzma al tovat hayared. That she preferences her own personal goodness over the goodness of the boy. Ve'ilu em Yehudia hayta ma'edifa et tova b'na. But a Jewish mother would have given preference to her son. And again, I remind you what I mentioned before with Yocheved. We have to really think about that. Al tovatahi, over her own goodness. Ve'hayta nisheret im b'na hagoses. And a Jewish mother would remain with her dying son. She would caress him. Manikalo ahavat im. She would give over to him the motherly love. Ad harega ha'acharon. Until the very last moment. Ad kan devarav. That was all a quotation from Rav Hirsch. Ulechoora gam be'inyanenu ra'ui la'im b'Yisrael la'adif et tovat hayilud. And at first glance, it seems that in our matter, it would be preferable for a mother of Israel to preference the goodness of the boy. V'lechein me'achar v'chalev im yesh bo yitronot ha'chalev melachuti. And since there are benefits of breast milk over formula, u'mekevan shechazal b'masachet k'tuvot, and because Chazal, our rabbi, said in the Gemara, kav'u shetinok makir et imo mi'chamishim yom v'ilach, that a baby recognizes his mother from 50 days of conception and onward. V'kach katar sham ha'me'iri, and the Me'iri, a famous medieval scholar, comments there on the Gemara. V'afilo haya hatinok suma, even if the baby were blind, mikomakom makir timo berecha ubetam chava, he still recognizes his mother from her smell and the taste of her milk. V'lo yirtza linak mi'isha achert, and he wouldn't want a nurse from another woman. Uberov hatinokot shi'aru zman hakarato mechamishim yom ve'ilach v'chule, and she'yay. They know that they recognize their mother from 50 days. I guess this is 50 days, maybe not conception, maybe 50, I don't know. And therefore, it's suitable that she should give him this mother's love and nurse him. In addition to this, we find that our rabbis, they describe children as... what's it called in English when you leave something with somebody? No, like a property. You leave a, like when you go to a pawn shop and you leave it there as a
collateral.
Yes, a picadon. Velachein im b'Yisrael, and therefore a mother in Israel machzika et a picadon she'Hashem yitbarach natan la. And therefore a mother in Israel holds on to this collateral that God has given to her. Is that the right word?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think so.
Yeah. Atom lelo hit. She gives no regard to her own situation. And therefore, on the contrary, it doesn't bother her spiritually. It actually makes her a bit more relaxed spiritually to be taking care of her child. And Chazal say in a midrash on Mishle, al bruria. The story of Beruah, you probably know, Eshet Rabbi Meir, the wife of Rabbi Meir, Shebe Bisralo al Beneham Shenifteru, that their two sons died. And Beruah breaks it to her husband, Rabbi Meir, by saying, what do you do when somebody leaves a collateral with you and they come to collect it? And you have to give it. And then she says, God collected the souls of our two sons.
Mm-hmm.
I just said that. That's what it's... Okay, so that's exactly what I said. It goes on. Hebrew Kachamart's... So too, I need to give back the collateral to its master, and that's our children. Rabbi Meir was comforted in the way that his wife Beruah presented to him. L'kach ne'amar, and therefore it says, Eshet chayal mi'imtza, who can find the woman of valor. L'ma'aseh ben nidunenu, but then he goes back to our case of this woman who gave birth to this baby with a heart defect. Mistaber she'ayelet she'nolad hu begeder treifa. V'chayav lo chayim. He says, maybe this is different, because as soon as this baby boy is born, there's no hope, and you know he's going to die. So maybe he's not a dying baby, but rather this trefa, which is a category of like an animal who's about to die. You can't shecht that animal. It's not kosher. It's called, that's why you have the word treif. V'lechein eno dome li'ishmael she'haya b'vchinat goses. This is not the same as Yishmael, who was not a trefa. It wasn't sure he was going to die. He was goses. He was really suffering and struggling. He was dying, but he wasn't going to die. Shechayav ad harega haacharon chayim, because his life until the very last moment, he's still living. Umishum kach yesh lishkol mechadash yitzachin sheyesh la'adif et ha'im al yad. So maybe in this hospital case, we can preference the mother over the boy. So anyway, he ends it inconclusive, but he is clearly on the side of Rav Hirsch that a mother would never abandon her child in her child's time of need. It would never place her own needs first. That's not the characteristic of a Jewish mother, although we do see it in Hagar. Okay, and I think, so then the next two sources are about this well. What is it? According to one opinion, it's the Be'er L'chai Ro'i that we saw last time. And according to another opinion, it was one of the things created before the very first Shabbos. So where does the well come from? And then finally, to add to our negative perspective of Hagar, she brings him a wife from the land of Egypt. And Rashi there says, from the place where she grew up, as it is stated, and she had an Egyptian handmaid. That is what people say, throw a stick into the air and it will land on its place of origin, the ground. Is very similar to the apple doesn't far fall from the tree. But on the other hand, as the Ayelet HaShachar said, maybe part of that is our responsibility of what happened with Hagar and Yishmael. My rabbi in Las Vegas, Rabbi Wein, says, yes, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree, but what if the tree is on a very steep hill and the apple drops? Then the apple's going to go very far from the tree. Or what if it's a hurricane? It's a very windy day. And so in this case is that Hagar was expelled from the house of Abraham, perhaps that might be what set all of this into motion. On the other hand, we can't ignore some of the characteristics that when we read, not in between the lines, but closely into the words presented to us, really do depict a somewhat, or maybe not just somewhat, unfeeling mother who behaves in a way that really is not a Jewish way and didn't belong as part of the Jewish people in Avram's household, the future of the Jewish people.
I guess I'm having a little difficulty with explaining that as a Jewish mother you wouldn't do this. And we certainly know and have people in our lives today that are not Jewish and they are the best mothers and the most caring.
I would say that that's a result of Abraham and a result of ethical monotheism permeating
across,
into, yes.
And then that now it crosses religious and belief lines.
Yeah.
And
it's
just not.
Right. We wouldn't consider.
I think of it as innate.
Right. We wouldn't consider the non-Jewish people, most of them in America, to be idolaters, right? They don't fall under that category. They're all part of this umbrella.
Right. So it does specifically refer here to Hagar being an idolater.
Exactly.
And in today's society, if you had someone that, idolizes
although
I guess you could say that they are at risk of not
and,
having
contrary to that, I just saw Les Mis on Sunday night and the way they treat children and how Fontaine is an anomaly in the care she gives to her illegitimate child highlights this way that we treat children or
I can't see that show enough.
It's so depressing. Okay. So thank you, everyone, for joining. I'm going to shut off recording.